Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Lori London reporting. A defiant President Donald Trump Thursday flatly denied that he pressured the FBI to close its investigation of a former close aide and questioned the need for a just-appointed special prosecutor to probe possible collusion between his 2016 campaign and Russians trying to influence the presidential election.
Well, I respect the move, but the entire thing has been a witch hunt, and there is no collusion between certainly myself and my campaign. But I can always speak for myself and the Russians, zero.
At his first news conference since April 12th, standing alongside visiting Colombian President Juan Manuel Santos, Trump lamented that the controversies swirling around the White House are damaging national unity. Those comments following a pair of early morning Twitter posts questioning the need for the appointment of former FBI Director Robert Mueller as a special counselor to look into the collusion allegations. A car slammed into pedestrians at Times Square in New York, killing an 18-year-old woman Thursday. Police identified the driver as a 26-year-old U.S. citizen who had a history of arrests for driving while intoxicated. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio says it's being investigated as an accident.
Now, thank God, based on what we know now, there is no indication that this was an act of terror. But for anyone who's concerned, my message is always the same. This is the safest big city in America that has been proven many times over.
22 additional people were injured, according to the New York Fire Department. Wall Street rebounded on Thursday from its biggest sell-off in more than 8 months with help from a move to loosen internet regulations and strong economic data. This is VOA News. The U.S. State Department said it will express concern in the strongest possible terms over Tuesday's violent clash in Washington involving supporters of Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. Some U.S. officials criticized them as the aggressors against peaceful protesters, saying their actions outside the Turkish ambassador's residence violated American protections on free speech. State Department spokesman Heather Nauert said in a statement, "Violence is never an appropriate response to free speech, and we support the rights of people everywhere to free expression and peaceful protest. We are communicating our concern to the Turkish government in the strongest possible terms." D.C. police said they were checking reports that two men who were arrested were among the Turkish leader's guards. The U.S.-led coalition aircraft have struck pro-Syrian government forces that continue to violate a deconfliction zone set up around an army base where special forces are training Syrian militias. U.S. Central Command spokesman Major Josh Jock told VOA that pro-Syrian government forces set up a convoy with Syrian tanks, bulldozers, armed vehicles, artillery vehicles, and technical vehicles and began creating fighting positions for their tanks. Former Fox News CEO and co-founder Roger Ailes died Thursday morning at 77 years old. The news organization announced the network was informed of Ailes' death by his wife Elizabeth. News anchors struggled to control their emotions as they read a statement written by Ailes' wife, Nikki Usher, assistant professor at George Washington University School of Media and Public Affairs.
I think Fox News was successful for a lot of reasons, but I think that Roger Ailes was a huge part of that. He understood from the get-go better than anybody else how to tap into partisanship and create politics as entertainment.
Ailes spent 20 years as the head of Fox before he was removed last year amid claims of sexual harassment against him. Scientists have discovered a possible cure for all five known Ebola viruses, one of which ravaged West Africa 2 years ago. The so-called broadly neutralizing antibodies were discovered in the blood of a survivor of the West African epidemic that occurred between 2013 and 2016. The deadly virus killed more than 11,000 people of the nearly 29,000 that became infected in Liberia, Guinea, and Sierra Leone. I'm Lori London in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Friday, May 19th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Nigeria's military rejects a Transparency International report alleging corruption in the fight against Boko Haram.
The report by Transparency International is rather unfortunate and definitely false and not true, in the sense that I don't know where they did their research from.
Major General John Enenche is the Director of Defense Information for the Nigerian military. Ugandan police are under fire for allegedly torturing suspects. South Sudan's president has again appealed to armed groups to use peaceful means to address their grievances. And the inter-Burundian dialogue resumes next week, but the opposition blames the facilitator for limitation on who should participate.
This is extremely concerning since those who were passed to the arrest warrants are the very genuine parties to the conflict. They are the people who the regime in Bujumbura fear.
Vital Nshimirimana is a Burundian civil society leader. Guinea-Bissau soldiers who fought alongside the Portuguese army during the Independence War say they feel rejected by both countries. A Young African Leaders Initiative exchange promotes women's legal rights in Malawi. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The Nigerian military has rejected a Transparency International report alleging that corruption has inhibited the fight against the Islamist militant group Boko Haram. Director of Defense Information, Major General John Enenche, says the report is aimed at tarnishing the reputation of the Nigerian military as well as thwart any help from the international community. In its report, Transparency International says financial malfeasance in the government has left the military ill-equipped to fight the Boko Haram militants. Major General John Enenche tells viewers Peter Clotty that the report was based on fabrications. He urged the organization to desist from peddling misinformation about the Nigerian military.
The report by Transparency International is rather unfortunate and definitely false and not true, in the sense that I don't know where they did their research from. When I got the report that the Nigerian military officials are corrupt, and because of that, Boko Haram insurgency is not ending. Imagine for somebody to do such a statement to the public. On what grounds at this moment that we are recording successes in the Northeast? How many days ago, 82 gates were released? Who and who were involved? The Nigerian military, the State Service, the Red Cross, and then the government of Sweden, amongst others. What about equipment and others, the support we have been getting? So where did they get that information from? I'm telling you that it is from nowhere and it is not true.
There were concerns that some contractors that the military dealt with, some officials connived with these contractors to siphon money from the government coffers.
And that is why they are very, very wrong. Very super wrong, completely wrong. Who did the contractors again? There is the rule for public procurement. So let them go and get the information. I can quote authoritatively. It was reconfirmed on the 16th of this month by the Honorable Minister of Defense. Nigerian Ministry of Defense now, all of us inclusive, we have direct dealings with government to government. What about since the United States lifted the embargo on sale of arms to us? Are we dealing with any contraction from the United States? And it cut across board. I will tell the whole world that since 2015, from when this new leadership took over, things have changed. So I am suspecting that this kind of report is just meant to tarnish our image, demoralize our troops, and discourage the international community that are helping us in our efforts to sustain the successes we are recording in the Northeast.
Are you saying that now soldiers of the Nigerian military have the necessary equipment to fight and root out Boko Haram?
Yes. The essential equipment within the rules of engagement. The essential equipment you need to use in a populated area. That is it. There are equipment that you can use to clear a whole area. They are available. Have we used them? No. The essential equipment, the smaller weapons, the weapons use minimum necessary force to achieve the desired aim. Yes, we have them.
Major General Enenche, Transparency International said that Nigeria should make its defense budget and procurement systems more transparent to ensure that contracts were not inflated or given to shell companies to conceal the true beneficiary. Are you going to consider this?
They are not correct. Let them go and find out what is the Nigerian government doing now. The Minister of Finance spoke to the whole world at a town hall meeting, I think some 2 days ago. That is why I say that their report is a misinformation to the general public. Whoever did that research, let them come out with specifics. Our budgeting system from the federal level, as far as I'm concerned, is so open now. Even our national budget for the National Assembly was made open how many days ago? And all that started from as far back as what, 2015, when the Minister of Finance started reforms below public procurement. So there is an ulterior motive for releasing this kind of a report without in-depth investigation.
Major General John Enenche is the Director of Defense Information for the Nigerian military. He spoke with VOA's Peter Clotty from the capital, Abuja. Police in Uganda have come under fire for allegedly torturing suspects. Both the president and interior minister publicly recognized the problem this week and called for it to end. Halima Athumani reports on the case that has brought this issue to the fore.
On March 17th, Uganda's Assistant Inspector General of Police was gunned down in Kampala. 5 days later, police said they were holding 17 suspects. It would be another month before those individuals appeared in court. Media was blocked from the proceedings, but leaked photos of the inmates showed clear signs of abuse. When they appeared in court for a second time on May 5th, the detainees told the magistrate they were being beaten. They raised their hands several times, showing the magistrate wounds and bruises on their wrists. They said they were being kept handcuffed for long periods of time and were not being fed. The proceedings were broadcast on national television, sparking outrage. Uganda police spokesperson Asen Kasinje says two police officers have been arrested.
The techniques of investigations, torture is not cited anywhere. So if you step out of procedure, definitely we shall question you. Not only why you did it, but you must also tell us who told you to do it if you were under command.
The 17 suspects looked to be in better shape Thursday at their third court appearance. Viewers saw a few of them limping and several of them had what looked to be healing wounds on their arms. Earlier this week, President Yoweri Museveni released a public letter to security chiefs. The president said torture is unnecessary and wrong and does not produce reliable evidence. He said torture is not to be used. The Minister of Interior Affairs then appeared before Parliament and apologized to the country in response to the media reports of police torture. He admitted that laws have been broken and said investigations are ongoing. Uganda Law Society President Francis Gimara says it will take more than words to create lasting change. He says the Law Society is engaging with the Director of Public Prosecution.
We want him to enter into an MOU, we say for torture cases, give them to us, Uganda Law Society. We will prosecute the commanding officers because we think that they are the ones responsible for these increased acts of torture. And torture is unacceptable because it is degrading, it is traumatizing, and in this time and age, barbaric.
Police spokesperson Kasinje says police are implementing new procedures to document a detainee's condition at the time of arrest.
Before you sign detention order form, ascertain the condition under which that suspect has been brought. And if you are not sure about the medical condition of that suspect, you are not obliged to detain that person. And number two, to make sure that somebody is treated.
The 20 suspects detained in connection with the murder of the police commander are expected back in court on June 1st. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butt in Washington. Today's Friday, May 19th. Daybreak Africa time is 14 minutes past the hour. The inter-Burundian dialogue consultation meeting is set to resume next week in Uganda. But both the Burundian government and the opposition are blaming the facilitator for limiting who can attend. Moses Aviarimana reports from Bujumbura.
The eligibility of who should participate and who should not in the regional mediated dialogue remains a serious concern for both the government and the opposition leaders in Burundi. The facilitator, former Tanzanian President Benjamin Mkapa, released a statement that only representatives who are not under arrest warrant will be invited for the talks slated for next week in Uganda. Burundi government in 2015 issued arrest warrants to those who organized the protest against President Pierre Nkurunziza and accused of destabilizing the country. Vital Nshimirimana is a civil society leader who mobilized the protests and currently living in exile.
This is extremely concerning since those who were passed to the arrest warrants are the very genuine parties to the conflict. They are the people who the regime in Bujumbura fear.
Mr. Vital said that former Tanzanian president is manipulated by the Burundi government to promote their agenda.
Continuing to exclude these people mean that the facilitation is not adherent of its mission because it continues to play the game of the regime of Bujumbura, which portrays freedom fighters, human rights defenders as the criminals.
Mkapa's team earlier this month visited Bujumbura and consulted with the religious leaders, youth and women representatives in efforts to find a sustainable solution for the political crisis. President Pierre Nkurunziza's spokesman Jean-Claude Karirwa says that the facilitator's team is contradicting itself.
But unfortunately, I have received an invitation sent to one of the civil society organization leader, an organization which is now not registered within the Burundian laws. So there are some contradiction in the statement and what the facilitation team is doing. We have already notified the facilitator. We want him to comply with the United Nations Security Council resolution.
As the regional mediated dialogue is yet to bring an impact in the current political crisis that rocked the country 2 years on, the National Dialogue Commission that was set up by Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza released a final report indicating majority of Burundians support the amendment of the constitution to scrap the presidential term limits. This will allow the incumbent president to vie for the 2020 general elections. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
South Sudan President Salva Kiir has again appealed to armed groups fighting to topple his government to lay down their arms and use peaceful means to address their grievances. President Kiir made the remarks while addressing hundreds of soldiers at the SPLA headquarters in Juba during an event marking the 34th anniversary of the founding of the Sudan People's Liberation Army. Wake Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
SPLA military band and a choir perform a liberation song at the SPLA headquarters in Juba's Belfam neighborhood as President Kiir arrives for the 34th SPLA anniversary celebration. Dressed in full military fatigues, President Kiir spent several minutes recalling the rise of the SPLA as a ragtag rebel force determined to conquer discrimination, marginalization, and oppression by successive regimes in Khartoum. Mr. Kiir also used the occasion to call on rebel fighters to lay down their guns and join his administration.
I want to appeal to all our citizens, including those who are in opposition, to embrace nationalism and to be patriotic. We should not allow our own hands to destroy most precious gains which we have made since we took up arms in 1983. At this time, we should focus on building a nation rather than allowing external forces to push us further into conflict.
May 16th is the day John Garang and other South Sudanese rebelled against Khartoum in 1983. A 21-year-long bloody war between Khartoum and the Southern Sudanese rebels ended in 2005 with the signing of the Comprehensive Peace Agreement, which subsequently led to South Sudan's independence in 2011. In his half-hour speech, Mr. Kiir stressed the need for unity in the army and unity in the nation.
While we find ourselves at the crossroads, we must press forward and choose the path that leads us back to peace and prosperity. As a government, we remain committed
to this principle. Fellow citizens, when our flag was raised, it was raised along with it the hopes and dreams of generations past, present, and future generations. We must consistently remind ourselves of those hopes and ambitions. But the only way to achieve that potential is if we are united as a people.
But as he called for peace, the president also warned that government forces will continue to fight in self-defense if attacked by the armed opposition. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Many of Guinea-Bissau nationals who fought alongside the Portuguese army during the War of Independence now live in Lisbon. But because they were forced to fight for Portugal during the war, some say they do not feel welcome in either country. Ricky Stryak reports.
Gathered around a restaurant table in Lisbon, former soldiers from Guinea-Bissau discussed their country's fight for independence that raged from 1963 to 1974. These fighters have a unique view of the past, though. They fought on the side of the colonizer, Portugal.
The main reason is Guinea-Bissau.
Ocante Gomez begins his story by stating he is from Guinea-Bissau and a former member of the Portuguese military. But it was not his choice to fight on the side of Portugal, he adds, saying it made him feel badly. Gomez studied in Portugal and then went back to Guinea-Bissau to work at a hospital before being forcefully recruited into Portugal's army, he says. He has lived in Portugal now for 9 years. Gomez adds that after the war, many of his fellow Bissau Guinean fighters for Portugal were killed by independence fighters, and he was harassed, so he had to flee to Portugal, although he even had trouble at first with Portugal allowing him to live in the country. If he and his colleagues are alive now, it's a miracle, he adds. His fellow fighter, Abdoulaye Diallo, agrees. Diallo had an especially difficult task while serving as a soldier on Portugal's side during Guinea-Bissau's War of Independence. His brother was fighting on the other side. He said after the war finished, they were sad because they had been fighting with their brothers. According to the former fighters, there are only about a few dozen of them living in Portugal. Some of them said they feel they are more Portuguese than Guinean, but that Portugal does not fully accept them. Others said Bissau would always be their home, but they do not feel they can return. Ricky Shryock for VOA, Lisbon.
Launched by the Obama administration in 2014, the Mandela Washington Fellowship for Young African Leaders, known as YALE, has brought hundreds of young Africans to the United States to study and network. A new component of the initiative, the Reciprocal Exchange Program, has taken 26 Americans to 17 African countries since March to work on projects with former YALE fellows. Lamech Mansina has the story of one of those exchanges from Msanje in southern Malawi.
This is more than entertainment. These women are teaching others about their legal rights. Common violations in Malawi include gender-based violence and poverty seizures. Most of the abuses go unreported, largely because of high illiteracy rate among women, currently at 71%.
We want to use community theater as a means to go out into the marketplaces and where people are to talk with kids, women, husbands, men. What are the issues surrounding women feeling subservient to not feeling that they are powerful and can be equal in their homes and in their community?
Catherine Kutz of the U.S.-based NGO Women's Campaign International spent 3 weeks in Malawi as part of an exchange organized by the Mandela Washington Fellowship for Young African Leaders. She partnered with YALE fellow Chikondi Mandala of the Women Judges Association of Malawi to hold the legal literacy gatherings. Female judges and lawyers explained to the women how the legal process works.
We are telling them to be able to stand strong in, you know, believe in their femininity and know that it's not a negative thing to be a woman, that even women can do as much as men do, maybe even more, and probably better.
Nsanje is among the districts in southern Malawi where women are pressured by traditional practices like removing dust, where a widow must sleep with a hired man to supposedly increase evil spirits, and lobola, an agreement to relinquish all future property rights in exchange for payment of a bride price.
When it comes to property here in Nsanje, we believe that a married woman has no share of any family property, and when she is divorced, all the property belongs to the husband.
But as the women learned, Malawian law mandates that the court shall equitably divide and relocate property during divorce. Traditional leaders attended the gatherings to show their support. As for Kutsa and Mandala, they hope to continue the partnership they have forged to raise awareness about women's rights in Malawi. Lamek Masina for VOA News in Nsanje, Malawi.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Good morning to you, Samson.
Good morning to you, James. We begin with news from the under-17 African Cup of Nations currently ongoing in Gabon. In the second round of matches, Tanzania's Serengeti Boys stunned favourites Angola 2-1 in a Group B encounter, while Mali defeated Niger to go top of Group B. Friday was observed as rest day and matches are expected to resume tomorrow. Gabon will face Cameroon, while Guinea will face Ghana. On Sunday, it will be Mali versus Angola, while Tanzania will confront Niger. Harambee Stars coach Stanley Okumbi has named a 26-man squad of locally based players ahead of their international friendly match against Angola on June the 4th at the Kenyatta Stadium in Machakos. The squad has five players from league leaders Gor Mahia, while Kariobangi Sharks and 2010 champions Ulinzi Stars has four players each. The national team Harambee Stars will play an international friendly against Angola on the 4th of June in Machakos. The match will be a warm-up for the forthcoming 2019 African Cup of Nations qualifiers, the first against Sierra Leone on the 10th of June. Kenya last played an international friendly on the 18th of April against Malawi at the same venue that ended goalless. And to Cameroon, where the indomitable Lions coach Hugo Broos has announced a 30-man squad for the 2017 FIFA Confederations Cup built for Russia. While he kept the core of his AFCON winning side, the Belgian tactician called up seven new players. Making the list for the first time is Bulgaria-based midfielder Petros Bounal, who has been in eye-catching form with his CSKA Sofia in Bulgaria's top flight. And now to Ghana. Newly appointed Black Stars of Ghana coach Kwesi Appiah has vowed not to repeat the mistakes which cost him his job 3 years ago. Appiah is returning to the Black Stars after he paid the price for the country's rigged 2014 FIFA World Cup campaign in Brazil. Coach Kwesi Appiah insists he won't buckle under the weight of pressure to call up undeserved home-based players into his team. The 56-year-old says the call-up will be solely based on merit and nothing else. Appiah has five games coming up in 3 months. His first assignment will be in June when he plays Ethiopia in the 2019 African Cup of Nations qualifiers. St. George are the 2016-2017 Ethiopian Premier League champions for the third season on the bounce with 3 matches to spare. And from Tunisia, Esperance have been crowned Tunisian league champions for the 27th time in their history with a 3-0 win over Etoile Sportive du Sahel in the last round of the championship group. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. And that's it for this Friday, May 19th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, an in-depth look at the significance of Africa Day. Africa Day commemorates the creation of the Organization of African Unity on May 25th, 1963, the historical and cultural meaning of Africa Day.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.